My name is Tom Arms, and once a week I get together with my old school friend, Lockwood Phillips, to discuss world affairs. Well, the G20 summit is right around the corner, so this week we decided we'd do a real tour de raison, a sort of mini-summit, if you like. I hope you enjoy it.
Look Ahead Radio, with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This afternoon's program, of course, has been pre-recorded to accommodate our guests, or actually our foreign editor's need for beauty sleep. I'm sure he would appreciate that, as so many others will as well. But I say that with tongue firmly planted in cheek. Joining us, of course, this afternoon, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, where it's, well, 5 hours ahead of our time. He relying on, as I like to respond to it, Her Royal Highness times, as opposed to we here on the East Coast that rely on God's time. With that said, Tom, good afternoon, or actually good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening to you, Lockwood.
And so as we get prepared for the program, what's the weather like in London?
Oh, it's been raining. Terrible rain. In fact, it exposed a chink in my exterior wall and we had water pouring into the kitchen. I have to have a workman come around and fix it.
How easy is it to find people now for that kind of activity in London? I mean, it's a big city. Is it easy to... Do you have such things as, well, various internet delivery service or information services that provide...
Yes.
Okay, very interesting.
Yes, but the big problem is not finding them on the internet, but, you know, persuading them to come around and actually do the work.
We in certain areas of this country have the same problem. All right, well, since we talked about the internet, this should be really a very important topic for us here and for you as well. The recent fine penalty applied to Google, over $2 billion by the European Union on the grounds of, I guess... controlling the communications and I'm trying to remember the specifics, but
the breaching antitrust law, EU antitrust law.
That's interesting. So the European Union has an antitrust law. Here's a quick question.
Yes.
You know, this is a U.S. company. Do they have to get a license to operate in European EU countries?
I don't know if they have to have a license as such, but if they operate, if they sell their goods in European countries, you'd think they would be subject to European law for the goods that they sold, just like any British company, internet company, tried to sell goods in America would probably be subject to American laws.
But the other aspect of this is, who applies the fine? The European Union is really a consortium of countries. Where's the...
It comes from the European Commission.
Okay, which is housed in Brussels, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Okay. What's the feeling among, for example, those of you in Great Britain who are in the process of exiting the European Union? Do the Brits get a piece of the action, as it were, or are they what's their role?
I don't know how the money's divvied up, but a lot of people are saying that actually Google got off lightly, that this is just a shot across the bows, because under the antitrust laws, they can fine the company up to 10% of its annual revenues, which would be $90 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so $1 trillion company easily. Yes. The other aspect of this is who is the injured party in this one? And I'm asking some pretty arcane details, so you may not have the response to that. But I'm just curious, who's the injured
party is the consumer. Okay. Although a lot of the initial complaints were coming from Microsoft and other price comparison sites.
Ah, okay.
And so it's basically it's other price comparison sites, It's the consumer. What they claim is that Google has been unfairly moving its price comparison sites up the Google rankings, so that Google material appears at the top and other price comparison sites underneath it. And they say that is grossly unfair.
Another question, and then we'll move on to other items. Don't want to focus too much on the digital aspects of this, but I'm curious. We're seeing some changes, significant changes, disruption, as we call it here in the States, as a result of the digital environment. And Tom, I'm wondering, in the European community in Great Britain, there on the continent, France, Germany, what role has the digital media played in enterprise? And is it having the same disruptive nature? We're seeing major retailers now consolidating, in some instances, even closing because of the move to the digital environment. And do you have facilities similar to operations such as Amazon, delivery services there in Europe that easily accommodate this move to the digital environment? What impact?
All of those services are over here, and in some respects, we use them more than they do in America. I think the figures show that actually people are using them more than in the United States. It varies from country to country. But this is part of the problem as far as the Google fine is concerned, because there's a growing feeling that the gatekeepers now are Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple, all American companies. There are no big European or British gatekeepers. And a lot of people in the European Union are a bit concerned about that, that it's completely dominated by American digital companies. And they think that that's one of the reasons why this shot was fired over the bow of Google.
As a clear indication to other companies as well. You know, this does beg the issue, what is now the future of the European Union as we become more of an international community where there are no boundaries? Again, this is a rhetorical question, but I'm wondering, is this part of the discussion and topics there in the European Union and other countries?
Well, it's part of the discussion about globalization as a whole,
right?
Because you could apply the same thing to the United States, you know, or any country. I always found it interesting. There was this... I think it was a Pakistani astronaut who went up with the Russians, and he was the first Pakistani astronaut. And he looked out of the window of the space capsule down at Earth and said, "Where's the boundary between India and Pakistan?"
How true, how true. There are no clear-cut lines. Tom Arms, of course, of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, we'll probably have to go to a break in the midst of all this, but I want to start with this quick observation on this one. It's related to, actually, the economy. You've got a G20 curtain raiser, you have a note here for me. How will Trump be received? And, of course, that's President Trump. First question, when is the G20 meeting? And it's, what's on the agenda?
Well, it's next week, and it's in Hamburg. And there are going to be a lot of things on the agenda. Let's start, first of all, by saying there are going to be a lot of demonstrators. They're erecting hundreds of thousands of demonstrators. They've recruited another 14,000 police to try and hold them back.
Wow. Demonstrators for what purpose?
Well, that's just it. There's going to be demonstrators for just about everything. There's going to be the gay rights will be demonstrating against Putin.
Okay.
The anti-Brexiteers will be demonstrating against Brexit. The pro-Brexiteers will be demonstrating for Brexit. There's going to be the human rights. There's going to be the climate change people who are going to be shouting about Trump. There's going to be the anti-globalization lobby. They reckon it's become a magnet for every interest group, these G20 summits. And Hamburg is going to be one hell of a place.
Literally and figuratively. Are you planning to attend by any chance, Tom?
Well, I was hoping you'd pay for the ticket. You know, I'd be out there waving anyone's placard if I could.
No. We can have the program Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms hanging in the videos as well. That's an interesting idea. Tom, the event, what's the purpose of the G20?
Well, the G20 event is, you know, the top 20 countries – getting together to basically, or top 20 leaders, to get together to talk about the major political and economic issues of the day.
But wait a second.
Now,
but wait a second, and we're going to go to a break. Don't we have the United Nations for that?
Well, yes, but that's not the top 20,
okay.
And it's not the heads of government.
I just find it interesting. It sounds a little...
I know where you're coming from, and there's an argument for it. But,
right,
a lot of people it's useful.
All right, we'll get back to that in just a moment with Tom Arms. Great way to end this first segment here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week being the 3rd of July. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. It's Summit Week, and the big one is the G20 Heads of Government Bean Fest in Hamburg on Friday and Saturday. There's a lot to discuss. Syria, South China Sea, the Sino-Indian border dispute, Russian gas pipeline to Germany, Venezuela, Ukraine, Brexit, climate change, free trade, America first, travel bans, Qatar, and the general world economic order. But also watch the bilaterals, especially the first face-to-face between Putin and Trump. Watch also the inevitable demonstrations. Hundreds of thousands of activists are expected to pour into Hamburg streets. Donald Trump is flying into Europe a day early to attend the Three Seas Initiative Summit in Warsaw on Thursday and Friday. The summit is a gathering of the leaders of EU states situated between the Adriatic, Baltic, and Black Seas. Chinese President Xi Jinping is also indulging in pre-G20 bilaterals. On Monday and Tuesday, he's in Moscow for talks with President Putin. They are likely to discuss Syria and North Korea, as well as common positions for the Hamburg meeting. After Moscow, the Chinese leader flies on to Germany for meetings with Chancellor Angela Merkel. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is stopping off in Israel on Wednesday on his way to Hamburg. It will be the first visit to Israel by an Indian Prime Minister. French President Emmanuel Macron on Monday outlines his plans for his 5-year term. The following day, the National Assembly votes on an authorization bill to allow the government to rule by ordinance so that it can deal with France's mounting economic and security problems. A French court on Tuesday delivers its verdict in a trial of 6 people accused of invasion of privacy of Britain's Duchess of Cambridge by taking and publishing topless photos of the future British Queen. Silvio Berlusconi, former Italian Prime Minister, starts his trial Monday accused of bribery. After his 2014 acquittal for sex with a 17-year-old girl, prosecutors accused him of bribing witnesses. A long-running dispute between Costa Rica and Nicaragua over the navigation of the disputed San Juan River comes before the International Court of Justice at The Hague on Monday. The dispute has gained added significance as the river could be a key link in a second Central American canal. Barclays Bank former executives appear in a London court on Monday on fraud charges. They are accused of illegal financial transactions involving Qatari investors in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. And that was next week's News Today from LookAheadNews.com so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England. Yes, this portion has been pre-recorded, but it's an important program, and thank you for staying with us. I do want to remind you, if you want tomorrow's news today, simply go to the website LookAheadNews.com and sign up. It's free, no charge. Tom, we're back to the G20. Just a few moments ago, you said that you picked up my sort of cynical remark about why do we have the G20 when we have the UN? You said the G20 is made up of the heads of state. We're going to get to that in a moment because I know that President Trump is supposed to be attending and that it's the 20 major countries in the world. The purpose to talk about geopolitical issues. I would also wonder possibly economic issues as well.
Absolutely. There's a lot of economic issues to talk about. I should note that this is going to be the first time that Putin and Trump meet face to face. So there would be a very important bilateral right there. Just before this, just this week, The Pew Research Center, by the way, did a survey of just what people around the world thought of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting. They surveyed 37 countries, and only 22% of those thought that Trump would do the right thing for the world as a whole.
Well, I, of course, we find that interesting here in the States, but I'll tell you, it doesn't really influence us, because one of the great complaints has been for quite some time that our leaders have been more concerned with international issues than national issues. And there are many, I've just a statement, a broad statement, we won't have to get into the details, or a disagreement. There are many here in the States who say are thankful that we have a president who appears to be most concerned first and foremost about the issues within the boundaries of the United States.
The reason I raised it, because I knew that's what you would say. I anticipated you, Lockwood.
No, you didn't.
Because
yes.
The editorials here, including an analysis from the BBC, said that very same thing. That, you know, the fact that he is there, he is in the White House, and he does have a bedrock of support, mm-hmm. is an indication of the feeling that people have towards the rest of the world, that is, Americans have towards the rest of the world.
It's not so much towards the rest of the world. It's just a sense that many in this country feel that the concerns of the United States have been relegated to second place and not at least relegated to an equal level to the concerns around the world. And we've had numerous callers on this issue as well, Tom, as you and I remember. But the other interesting aspect of this, and I want to go back to this, you just mentioned a moment ago, this is an opportunity for the heads of state. You mentioned a few moments ago, Vladimir Putin and President Trump having the opportunity to have face-to-face communications. We're going to have the opportunity yet with Prime Minister Theresa May will be attending. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
And of course, President Macron from France, and I assume Chancellor Merkel will be there in attendance as well.
Yes.
Okay, this is going to be a major event. The one thing that does fascinate me, happening in Hamburg, Germany, you know, it's the issue of security. The demonstrators aside, the whole concern related to security, that must be a real nightmare for the German government.
Oh, it will be. You know, I mean, it would be terrifying, you know, to have all those leaders in one place, and also all the demonstrators as well, because, you know, they may not be able to reach the leaders, but, you know, set off a suicide bomb in the middle of a crowd of several hundred thousand people. It's frightening.
What is the anticipation related to the arrival of President Trump? And by the way, we still have no clear indication. We talked about this last week as to whether or not President Trump's anticipated visit to Great Britain was still on schedule in light of the fact that the Queen failed to mention his name in her public comments last week to Parliament about the various heads of states that will be attending or coming to Great Britain. The first question, what is anticipated for President Trump and President Putin's arrival? And then I want to get to the topic of the potential arrival of President Trump in Great Britain. First, the G20
summit. Well, I don't
know
the details. I don't think anyone knows the details. They keep these closely under or very much under wraps.
How will they be received?
As to, you know, how they're going to be arriving and things like that. There are going to be demonstrations. People don't like either Putin or Trump. And so there are going to be very strong demonstrations. The German government doesn't like Trump. So, you know, I mean, he's a very unpopular man. Now, as for the question of Theresa May inviting Donald Trump to Britain, there's an expression here in the UK called kicked into the long grass.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means is when something has been sort of said publicly that it will happen or something along those lines, and then they discover, well, you know, maybe it was a mistake, we shouldn't have said it quite so soon or anything like that, they sort of kick it into the long grass where nobody can find it. Or they hope that nobody will find it, and they will eventually forget about it.
And that is, of course, so we're talking about the visit.
Government is talking about Trump's visit.
Okay.
It's been kicked into the long grass, and they just hope that people will just stop talking about it, and it will quietly fade into the deepest, darkest recesses of human memory.
Oblivion. By the way, what was the anticipated visit schedule? Do you have a date, a month that where he was?
No, nobody had that.
Okay.
They had not said that, just that it would happen as soon as possible.
You know, there's one other aspect about the G20 I want to touch on. We'll get to probably more details after this upcoming break. You note here that the Russian-German pipeline, which I assume might be one of the topics of discussion, that, of course, natural gas and oil coming from Russia going to Germany, apparently opposed by President Trump. What's the feeling there? Will that be a topic? And will maybe there be some conclusions to this?
Yes, it will be a topic. I don't think there's going to be any immediate conclusions to it. Another topic, of course, will be Syria, which we're going to talk about touching upon.
Okay.
But Trump is opposed to that. And in fact, I believe there's a proposal that's going through Congress now that any company which is involved in helping to build any pipeline carrying gas from Russia to Europe will have sanctions imposed against it. This is, I think it's been approved by the Senate, but not by the House. Of course, it hasn't been made law by the president.
Here's the question.
Germans are furious about that.
But here's the question.
They say, how dare you tell us who we can buy our energy from?
But here's the question for that one, Tom, and of course, we won't have time to belabor this, but the Russian-U.S. elections campaign connection, everyone has been charging that President Trump has this secret agenda and initiative with the Russian government, Vladimir Putin. Witness indicate that the U.S. has been pretty firm in standing against Russia, which I would think would be something of positive note for the rest of Europe, which, of course, has a great deal of discomfort with Russia as well. This is a confusing conclusion or message we're getting here in the States.
No, I can see exactly where you're coming from, and you might well be right. But at the same time, it hasn't come before the White House yet.
Okay.
It hasn't passed the House.
All right.
So we don't know yet. We don't know yet what Trump will be doing with the bill, assuming it passes the House of Representatives. It's certainly worth a lot of money to the Russians. It's worth a lot of money to the Germans.
Well,
you could also say that Angela Merkel has been particularly vociferous in pressing for sanctions against Russia over the Ukraine.
Right.
And so how can she then turn around and say, we want to buy Russian gas? Isn't that a breach of sanctions? Well, she's very good at compartmentalizing these things.
Well, it's not something that we miss here in the States. We're going to get to this and other issues here in just a few moments with Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. And, of course, Look Ahead Radio, heard every Friday afternoon here on the talk station FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. Our guest this afternoon, we have joining us Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London and 5 hours ahead of our time frame. So as we are hearing this program this evening, it is practically midnight where our guest is. And so we've pre-recorded this program for airing this afternoon. Tom, talking about, again, the economies of Europe and, of course, the EU, European Union. And we were chatting a few moments ago about Russia selling gas and oil to Great Britain. It is of note, and we don't have time, and it's not on our list, but it is interesting to note that the cost of petrochemicals, the oil and gas, is declining rather rapidly here in the States. I assume it's a similar situation there in Great Britain and in Europe?
Yes, it is. But, of course, in Europe, you also have a decline in production from the North Sea,
right,
which is one of the reasons why they want to hook up to the Russian.
Okay, very interesting. Let's talk about European Union citizens. In the UK, the first hurdle of Brexit. We touched on it earlier, the whole issue of Brexit. And of course, I would assume that might be one of the topics of discussion at the G20 next week in Hamburg, Germany. But what about this, the European Union citizenship, citizens having access to the UK?
It might be a topic of discussion between Angela Merkel and Mrs. May, and also between Mrs. May and Emmanuel Macron in bilaterals. But not at the G20 table itself. The problem is that Mrs. May has put forward a proposal which the EU, she thought they were going to jump on it, and they haven't. Mm-hmm. And so the very first proposal that's been put forward, people are equivocating over. And the reason is because the EU had previously put forward a proposal saying that basically, all the Brits in Europe can stay in Europe and have the same rights that they had before Article 50 was invoked and Brexit negotiations started. And vice versa, all the Europeans living in Britain could stay in Britain and have the same rights that they had prior to Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. May said, yeah, fine, except that the Europeans will no longer be protected by the European Court of Justice.
Uh-huh.
So their rights will not be protected by the European Court of Justice. And the reason for that is that Britain wants to withdraw from the European Court of Justice as part of Brexit. And this is the first hurdle, one of the first hurdles that they're coming up against. And at the moment, I wouldn't say it's insurmountable. They'll probably find some fudge around it, but it's the first big obstacle and delay. And it just does not augur well for the rest of the negotiations. It just shows how all these things have these tiny little details, these devilish details, which people have to deal with.
You know, real quickly, before we move on to other topics, what impact will this have on Theresa May's efforts to remain as prime minister in light of the very close election that was just conducted?
Well, all these things are going to be damaging to her.
Okay.
So, because she starts talking about strong and stable and everything else, and look at me, I'm a great negotiator. And very first proposal she puts on the table, they reject.
Okay. That's interesting. And when you say they reject, who's rejecting it?
The European Commission.
The European Commission.
The EU negotiators.
But this is part of that hard Brexit, is it not?
Well, it's very difficult to say whether it's hard, soft, or whatever. It's, you know, shall we say, a difference of opinion.
Here's the conclusion on this. The European Union, and this is my opinion on this one, purely and simply, the European Union's whole concept was poorly designed because it does not account for or allow for an easy departure. I just, there are a lot of details that it sounds to me like were never truly ironed out. Just an observation. Let's move on to the issue of a London torture conference. This is interesting. You mentioned an issue of the court. Tell us about this program. It's, you attended this past Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Monday, you may not have noticed, was the International Day for the Victims of Torture.
Mm.
And so the International Bar Association and the UN High Commission for Human Rights held a joint conference, international conference, at King's College London, and which I attended. It was very interesting indeed. They are very concerned about several things. They're very concerned that torture seems to be creeping back into the American agenda. And reference was made during the conference to a story which has recently come out from Associated Press that the United Arab Emirates had set up a series of black torture sites where something like 2,000 people or more are being tortured. And the torture includes things like literally roasting them on a spit.
Okay.
Now, the American administration says that they have no one present at these tortures. No one. Arm's length, completely. You know, nothing to do with us. We just ask the questions and wait for the answers.
Oh, okay.
But we're not present at the tortures.
Now, of course, am I understanding that there's an assumption that the U.S. is facilitating or in some way complicit in these tortures? Is that what they...
That is what's come out in the AP stories. That they are, you know, they're denying it, but various people within the administration are saying, yes, we are asking questions. We're not asking how the answers are being obtained, but we are asking questions, and we are getting answers.
You're seeing this at AP. I've not seen these stories at all. And of course, yeah. I've not. Okay. That is a shocking and
disappointing. But the other thing that came up, what they're very worried about is that the U.S. will cut off funding to this group, the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights, will cut off funding to it, and they won't be able to help the various people who have been tortured in the past. There's something like 50,000 a year that they help to try and cope with the effects of torture.
Well, speaking of torture, and this comes up next in the question in our list of things, is Syria. And of course, Bashar Assad is known for the torture of his own people.
And tens of thousands.
So let's talk about that in relationship to the chemical potential of another chemical attack, which has been described as potentially happening. And the president has notified the Syrian government that would be a terrible thing to do, meaning there will be definite reaction. And let's just say that the U.S. was first to react the last time Syria initiated a chemical attack that by Bashar Assad. Will that be a part of the discussions at the G20 by any chance?
Absolutely. It will almost certainly be. It'll be a major topic of discussion between Putin and Trump, but also between Trump and his NATO allies. Right after Sean Spicer made that public announcement, the British Defense Secretary went on the radio and said, "We support a proportionate response." And they said that the response back in April was proportionate, so that the airplanes which conducted or carried out the chemical weapon attack were destroyed by American missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that was regarded as proportionate, and that's acceptable. However, they are concerned that the way that the latest ultimatum was given and the phraseology used would mean that Trump administration is going to have to step it up a notch, but they can't be quite so proportionate. And that's what they're worried about, because if it is not proportionate, they fear the risk of a shooting war with Russia and Iran.
And of course, we have this situation right now where Russia has told the U.S. stand back. So the potential is still there. I mean,
Well, this is just it. This is just it. You've got a very dangerous situation as the war against the caliphate comes to an end, because the clear winners so far are Assad, Iran, and Russia.
Right.
And it looks as if they're going to come out on top, which means less influence for the United States and its Western allies in the Middle East. Now, the U.S., I would think the State Department is getting a bit desperate. They want to make certain that they have a seat at the table, whatever table there might be. And the moment they don't have one. And so the danger is that the chemical weapons, if Assad were to use the chemical weapons and the response from the Trump administration was more than proportionate, that one of the reasons for it being more than proportionate was, in fact, to try and gain that seat at the table.
All right. So you're
and that is a danger.
Okay. I just find this interesting, and in light of the concerns related to torture, and of course the argument is very quickly that we've seen so little reaction to the events in Syria of late. And frankly, this goes back to the initiation of our conversation about how Europeans see, and predominantly Europeans, see the United States and President Trump, and the frustration that you heard my remark to, that we have feel here in the States that we've provided very aggressive assistance worldwide at great expense to the American taxpayer, and without a questionable with questionable return for the taxpayer, and also an understanding and appreciation for the investment. But that's a
politics, diplomacy. It's all full of contradictions, isn't it?
It is. And helping us with those contradictions is our guest, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Look Ahead Radio heard every Friday afternoon here on the Talk Station. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Torture is bad. Well, there's nothing like stating the obvious. Nothing like shouting a truism from the digital rooftops. Except that for 58% of Americans, it is not a truism. It is not a position which they support. In fact, they support torture. Perhaps because their president claims it absolutely works. This is despite the opposition of CIA experts and Defense Secretary James Mad Dog Mattis, who made it perfectly clear to Donald Trump that he could either have torture or Mad Dog at the Pentagon, but he couldn't have both. So, the president backed down. Or has he? This week, the Associated Press reported details of what are known as black sites run by the United Arab Emirates and based in lawless South Yemen. Black sites are secret bases where people are sent to be tortured. AP reported that there are at least 18 Yemeni black sites and at least 2,000 suspected jihadists have disappeared into them. The secret prisons are inside military bases, ports and airport, private villas, even in a nightclub. The means of torture are excruciatingly cruel. There is, of course, the tried and tested waterboarding, and various techniques involving electricity, rape, clubs, and fists. In one case, the victims were locked for days in a container with walls smeared with human feces. One of the favorite techniques is to tie the victim to a spit and roast them over an open fire. According to the AP report, there is no evidence that any American personnel hit any torture victim, pushed any jihadist underwater, or turn the crank of any roasting spit. Apparently, the CIA and Department of Defense can place hands on hearts and declare, "We have not tortured anyone." However, there is strong evidence the United States is heavily complicit in what is happening at the Yemeni torture sites. According to the AP report, U.S. personnel submit questions to UAE torturers. The torturers put the questions to their victims and then write up a detailed report for their American friend. Not a single hair of any victim is touched by any American hands. But does that mean they're clean? Of course not! The law, both moral and actual, is clear. Anyone who knowingly benefits from the fruits of torture is as guilty as the person who actually carried out the torture, just as anyone who ordered and benefited from a street robbery, fraud, or murder is guilty of conspiracy to commit the crime. If the AP reports are true, then the Trump administration is as guilty as sin, and Mad Dog should start seriously thinking about clearing out his desk. Of course, there is the original Trump argument that torture absolutely works. And besides, suspected terrorists deserve it, don't they? The first thing is the victims are often just that, suspected. They are arrested, detained, and subjected to degrading torture, which will scar them for life on the basis of suspicion. They have not been tried in any court of law. The 26th of June was International Day in support of the victims of torture. The International Bar Association and the UN High Commission for Human Rights marked the occasion with a joint conference at King's College in London. Zayed Raed al-Hussein, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, made it absolutely clear that torture does not work. It dehumanizes victims and torturers, and the information it extracts is highly suspect, if not totally misleading and unreliable. I can assure anyone listening or reading to this that if any grinning, sadistic torturer bearing an electrical appliance came within 10 feet of any of my body parts, I would tell them anything they wanted to hear, truth or not.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we have three items on the agenda we want to get through. Very first one, President Xi Jinping makes his first trip to Hong Kong to mark the 20th anniversary of its return to China by Great Britain. What is the anticipation here? And of course, Hong Kong is a special unit for China. They let Hong Kong pretty much manage itself, run itself with a certain influence from China. Very quickly, what is anticipated with this 20th, with this visit, his first visit?
Well, there'll probably be some demonstrations. Now, the reason why they allow Hong Kong to do this is because they wanted to ease Hong Kong back into the Chinese system. So under the agreement with Britain to hand Hong Kong back, they allowed for a 50-year period, during which time Hong Kong's basic law, as it was called, would remain in place. And that basic law enshrined things like the independence of the judiciary,
right,
and a free speech and a free market and things like that.
But
the result is that Hong Kong is the most prosperous and freest part of China.
And it's also a major economic connecting point between, I'm going to have to use the word, the totalitarian environment of China and the free world market. Is it not?
Not so much.
No, really?
Not so much. Oh. In the 70s and 80s, when I was going out to Hong Kong, something like a third of all of China's trade went through Hong Kong.
Right.
Now, it's only 3%.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
They're not as reliant on Hong Kong as they used to be.
That's interesting.
And so they're starting to chip away at those basic rights that the Hong Kong Chinese have. They've been arresting people. They've been fixing elections and things like that. And the Hong Kong Chinese are starting to get a bit worried about what is going to happen 30 years from now when this 50-year period of grace comes to an end.
Interesting. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us right now. We're going to move things along because I want to get to the Zambian opposition leader. These two items have a lot in common. Romanian government fails because the prime minister failed to pardon a corrupt colleague. Tell us very quickly about that, please.
Oh, it's great. The prime minister was a chap called Soren Grindianu. Okay, he was almost a complete unknown. But the party leadership, led by a man called Dragnea, decided he could be prime minister. And his job was to make certain that Dragnea, who's been convicted of felony charges, didn't go to prison, along with scores of other legislators in Romania who are up on various corruption charges.
That's
why he was put in place. But when he started to introduce legislation to prevent it, hundreds of thousands of people poured onto the streets to demonstrate. And so he withdrew the legislation. And so they booted him out of office and they're looking for someone who has a bit more backbone.
Wow. That's Romania, something we've not heard anything about. Zambia, we've got about a minute and a half to go. The Zambian opposition leader charged with treason after what?
The president, Edgar Lungu, was barreling down the road in his convoy And the opposition leader, a chap called Hichilema, was coming the other way. Now, apparently, you're supposed to get off the road when the presidential convoy goes by. Well, the opposition leader said, no, this road's big enough for the two of us. So he didn't get off. He just kept on driving. And he was arrested and charged with treason.
You're listening to Viewpoints Around. Oh, we can work on that one here in the States. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Look Ahead Radio heard every Friday afternoon here on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. As always, Tom, a great way to end the conversation. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.